Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Justin Case.
And how are you today, Justin?
Hey, I'm doing very well. You know, I just came from the ATS Mix newsroom where they've still got 45 big screen plasma TVs and they put in the new buffet, so you need to head there after the show. But I couldn't help but notice we got some very interesting breaking news relating to Jesse Jackson, of all people.
I've seen this. This has even allegedly made it across the Atlantic as well. So I know this is certainly being reported in the UK. And let me just throw what I think he said, that he was saying some disparaging comments about Barack Obama and saying that some of the time he feels like he's talking down to the black people.
But that's only half of the very scurrilous and scandalous statement that he made. I know this is a family show, so all I'm going to say is that Mr. Jackson strongly suggested that he would like to remove a very personal part of Senator Obama's body.
Doesn't exactly seem very Christian, really, does it?
I think that's a very serious case of sour grapes he's got going on there. You know, if he could bottle it, he could probably sell it, because as we know, earlier in the election cycle, Bill Clinton made some disparaging remarks about Jesse Jackson while he was on the campaign trail stumping for Hillary.
And, you know, I think he was quite rightly rounded on, you know, quite rightly so. That's half the fun of politics. And if someone says something stupid, you know, you expect the other side and the media to jump on them. So I think that's, you know. You can't have it one way. You've got to have it fair both ways. If you say something stupid about somebody, you expect to be jumped on.
Hey, that's very true. And just to prove to our listeners that we're not partisan here, I'd also like to point out that in this same news cycle over in the McCain presidential camp, John McCain has on his staff as an economic advisor the retired Senator Phil Graham. And today, early in the day, Phil popped the gasket. He did. He hauled off and he said that the American people were whiners and that this whole thing about the recession was just in our heads and that we should just sit down, shut up and move on to other things.
Yeah, maybe, you know, that wasn't said, you know, maybe he might like to go back and almost press the rewind button on what he said. But I can't help, Justin, but see something in what he says that. Yes, I, you know, the first person to say that I think we are looking at an economic downturn and maybe growth will not be as strong across the world or certain parts of the world as it has been. But I'm inclined to think that we are talking ourselves into a recession, that we are starting to get into the mindset that, hey, we are going to have a recession. And I think maybe it was some frustration that he sees people are just saying, well, we're in recession because everyone says we're in recession. Maybe he just didn't word things properly.
Oh, great. Now you tell me.
Well, I have no doubt at all that Senator Graham spoke the stone cold truth, but he broke one of the cardinal rules of American politics. When you're on the campaign's payroll, you do not rock the candidate's boat.
And I've got to say that's probably a fair and sensible thing to do. So presumably it's bye-bye, he's going to be sailing off into the sunset.
Well, as a matter of fact, just before I came in here, I happened to hear that Senator McCain himself was joking that he was now going to consider his bestest buddy Phil Graham for the potential ambassadorship to Belarus.
Yes. I suppose there are probably worse places he could go, but I'm not going to raise them because I may well get some hate you to use if I say anything nasty about some country in the world where we'll find out we've got a listener there who puts me on a death list or something.
And we do need to avoid that here because really, man, that is just not in our budget.
This is Agent X. You may know me as the secret informant for Dave and Johnny's ATS Mix Show. What a lot of you may not know is that I chose their show because AboveTopSecret.com is the only website out there that covers all the subjects that I love, whether it's a conspiracy about 9/11 or the secret United Nations meetings with extraterrestrials. I know I'm going to get the need-to-know updated information that I crave. I'd tell you more, but then I'd have to kill you. X out.
One of the things I noticed was that a lot of the CEOs and presidents of some of the major airlines, particularly in North America, have sent out a letter wanting the Congress to do something about oil speculation, which I think is interesting when you think of how regulated the air travel business is. And I sort of think that is quite interesting that, you know, all these people who, you know, probably most of the time would probably not want to sit, wouldn't want to do, you know, talk with each other because they're going hammer and tongs on a business point of view. But they all sat down and said, hang on a minute, why isn't Congress doing something to stop unnecessary speculation in the price of oil?
Well, hey, as our listeners already know, the price of oil is a very hot topic on AboveTopSecret.com. And we've had quite a few U2s and other assorted mail asking us, where can I go to complain to Congress about this?
Well, I've got to say, I've no idea where I would go to complain to Congress. I know in the UK, people are, you know, up in arms about this. And we resort in the UK to things like lorry drivers will drive along a fairly important arterial road into London to block it all up, to sort of protest about the cost of fuel. You know, this is common across Europe. Certainly in France, that's a particularly common way to protest, is that truckers will block the highways, fishing boats will block the ports, and even in Spain, that's another way that they do some of their protests. So they're much more direct action. And yes, I suspect we will have more direct action on things like that, because people are saying, well, hang on a minute, oil is going up and up and up, and it's not through natural supply and demand. You know, if all of a sudden there's a resource that's scarce and more people want it, I think most people would begrudgingly say, okay, I will pay more. But a lot of the hike in oil prices is purely people speculating, people who are buying futures in oil, having no intention to trade the oil, but are just selling it on to other people. And I saw somewhere an article that said that potentially an oil future could be traded 20 times from the time it's purchased as a future to the time it's realized. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, every time that happens, someone's making money.
Really quite shocking, especially when you stop to consider that it's all being done by computers. And you know how many thousands of times in 1 second that a network of computers can shake hands with each other? It's just shocking.
It is. And I can't disagree with these people saying that, you know, Congress ought to be doing something about speculation. And I suspect there's probably, you know, pressure across the whole world for governments to get involved in that one. But then to me, Justin, that begs the question of, well, what about a free economy and free market? You know, how do you reconcile maybe a government turning around and saying, you can't do that, but then them turning around and saying, but hang on a minute, this is a free economy, a free market. How do you draw the line here?
Well, actually, here in the United States, we draw the line by using the court of public opinion to try these cases. And just so that our listeners know, there is, in fact, a website which has been pointed out to us by a number of astute listeners. This would be www.stopoilspeculationnow.com. And if you go to this website, there are all the tools you need to whinge at Congress to your heart's content.
And the good question is whether anyone will be prepared to do anything about it between now and the U.S. general election. And I suspect not likely to happen, because wouldn't George W. Bush have to sign any act from Congress into law?
Well, yes, and of course that presumes that Congress got its act in gear to begin with, and right now they're busy with other things.
It's really shocking that they're busy with other things rather than, you know, worrying about their constituents who, and how many people from Congress are up for election at the same time in the general election?
Hey, quite a few. But, you know, just to show you that they haven't totally forgotten about us, today, as we go to air, President Bush has just signed into law an updated FISA court bill. Now, the Justice Department has the necessary authority to spy on transnational telecommunications without a court order. So from their point of view, they're saving taxpayers money by streamlining the bureaucracy. But from my point of view as a citizen, now they don't have to tell me that they're spying on me. Is your political baggage worn out or in need of repair? Is it out of style? If you're a veteran politician or new to the game, you need to check out the latest offering from Case Pro Industries. We're proud to present our newest product line, Political Baggage. These travel accessories are ideal for the elected official or practicing attorney on the go. All of our items are available in DNA-resistant black or gray. Our operators are standing by. Call now and we'll set you up with a leak-proof body bag with easy grip handles, ideal for moving or storing those skeletons that may be in your closet. Our versatile suitcases contain many watertight compartments, ideal for concealing, storing, or otherwise caring for your undocumented cash. We offer two-faced makeup cases, ideal for those spur-of-the-moment press conferences, or those late-night outings with your favorite paid escort. Don't accept cheaper substitutes. Ask for Political Baggage today.
I have a lot of baggage, and everybody has rummaged through it for years.
Just to put a little bit of teaser, as we were talking about senators and congressmen and all that type of thing, we do have coming up an interview with a candidate for one of the senator seats in Alaska, Bob Byrd from the Alaska Independence Party. So that's coming up as well, which I think I've got to say is quite exciting for me again to sort of understand that there's more to US politics than potentially Democrats, Republicans, and of course we now know about the Libertarian Party. So that interview is coming up later.
To me, this kind of thing is heartening. It's one of the reasons why I took this job in the first place, because when you stop to think that somebody had to take the time to put up the website that we mentioned earlier, and somebody had to take the time to file the paperwork and pass the hat to run for high public office, as we're going to get from the candidate here in the not-too-distant future, you know, it shows you that we still have options. We've just got to put down the TV remote. We've got to separate ourselves from the couch, and we've just got to go do it.
And that's something I think you and I have echoed on many occasions when we're doing this show, that, you know, people will say, oh, I'm not sure if I want to run for public office. I'm not sure if I want to do this one. You know, I say to everybody, if you want to do it, get up and do it. And I'm a big fan of saying, well, you can't really complain that hard and say, well, I think all this is wrong, if you're not prepared to get up and do something about it. You know, I think it's very easy, as you say, to just sit on the couch with the remote control and shout at the TV, shout at the radio, maybe shout when you're listening to this podcast. If you want to change things, there are people out there, and, you know, we're going to be hearing to Bob Byrd, who passionately believes in what he wants to deliver for not only the Alaskan people but the American people. You know, he's prepared to get up out there and go and do it. Wayne Root, passionate man. He said, I'm prepared to put my head above the parapet. And I think those are examples that we should all look to and say, hang on a minute, these seem to be average guys here. They don't seem to me anything special. They're just normal, everyday people who think, I want to try and do something and make a difference.
Absolutely. And because so many of our listeners are jaded, I know what's going to happen. So please just hold on, listen to the rest of the show, and hear what Bob Byrd has to say. And stop and consider this. You're going to write to me and you're going to say, hey, Justin, that whole website thing is a load of baloney. Well, once upon a time, I used to work for a member of Congress, and I know for a stone cold fact that if you crash their server enough times, the representatives and the senators will do some.
And I think that's the same anywhere in the world. If you hassle your officials, your elected officials, as so much that they will eventually say, hang on a minute, the only thing people are talking to me about is, for example, the price of gas, the cost of food going up. I haven't got decent health care. My children haven't got decent schools to go to, or the roads are badly maintained. If our elected representatives get hammered on the same thing day in, day out, eventually they will go, woo, I want a quieter life. I'm going to start doing something about it. And, you know, I think, you know, if we can encourage one or two people out of this show to think, get up and write a letter to your elected official, I'd say, hey, I'd be very happy with that.
Hey, it's thanks to other people that we have segments like The View from Canada.
Great one. Just to show that members out there, hey, are prepared to do something different, take an interest. And as Justin says, we're trying to expand that. So this is a, you know, a call to arms to our listeners. And I know we're potentially lining something up in the UK, but there are, I'm sure, plenty of other countries out there where we have listeners. All you have to do is just have the means to record 2 minutes of comment about what's going on in your country. Send Justin or I a UTU. We'll then send you an email address and you can send that to us. And by magic, all this, it's spliced into the show. So there you are. Here's an opportunity for a little bit of fame and glory on the Above Politics show.
I know that some of you will get in trouble if you say certain things inside your own country, but we're offering you an opportunity to speak to the entire world without that threat hanging over your head.
And, you know, and those are probably the people, I've got to say personally, Justin, I'm probably more interested in listening to is the person that is maybe prepared to say something that could get them into trouble, because you and I can almost say anything on air. We don't have to be thinking, looking over our shoulders, thinking, are there thought police, are there secret police, are there religious police or political police looking over our shoulders? And that's something that we take for granted and we probably don't think about, but there may be people listening to this show who, if you take what you've just said one stage further, Justin, could actually be listening to this show illegally. Their governments or their political leaders, their religious leaders may not want them to listen to this show, and they're taking a risk by even downloading the show and listening to it.
Holy cow, I never thought we could be so seditious so soon.
Oh, and it's not something that I want to necessarily be remembered for, but there are going to be countries out there potentially where listening to this show could get someone into trouble. And I think, you know, if they are, and if you can, if you are listening to this show in such a country, hey, tell us, you know, you don't have, we're not going to bandy it around on air. We're not going to reveal anything, but just for us to say, yeah, hang on a minute, I do listen to the show. I'm in a country where it's perceived to be illegal. It's perceived to be religiously wrong, politically wrong, morally wrong for me to listen to an American English show of some kind. Hey, I think that's an interesting thing to see whether we get any UTUs on that.
Oh, boy. Now, speaking of interesting, do you remember a few shows back when we interviewed ATS member Infinite and he dismissed my remark when I pointed out to him that there was a judge somewhere out there in the European Union who was trying to work out the legal differentiation between chips and crisps and cakes and biscuits? He said that was an urban myth.
And he probably was right in the whole general thing, and I think I know where you're going with this one. And for those in the UK, and I think I know you have the same product in the US, and this is not a product endorsement or anything, but it's just its brand name. There is a product called Pringles, which you have with dips of some kind. And there had been a court case where they were trying to prove that their product was not a potato crisp, because in the UK, a potato crisp is subject to value-added tax. So if it's a pound, you would actually pay £1.17 or £1.18. You pay tax on it. And Pringles, or the lawyers for Pringles, have successfully proven to a judge who has now made a judgment that the Pringle is not a potato chip. It is just a chip. So which means they don't have to charge VAT on it. And what that basically says is the amount of potato in the product, I believe, is 42%. So that's the justification they used to go to court, and a judge has backed them up on that one. Now, is this the kind of thing that happens in the States?
Oh, of course. This is this is American through and through. I believe it's close to 20 years ago now that once upon a time a woman sued McDonald's, of all things, because she went through the drive-thru, they gave her a hot cup of coffee that had no lid on it, she parked it right between her legs, and then proceeded to hit a speed bump.
And I'm laughing because I'm thinking, yeah, okay, you can understand that, and I bet she sued McDonald's for a huge sum of money because they didn't tell her the contents was hot, you know. And I have to think, there's got to be a little bit of personal responsibility. You know, when you pick the coffee cup up, it was hot. You know, the outside of it wasn't roasting hot, but it was probably still warm. You know, and if I'm driving along and I do the same thing, I'm not going to, you know, I don't think I'd turn around and sue McDonald's. I'd probably look at myself and think, oh, I've spilt scalding hot coffee over a rather important part of my body. Hey, I'm in pain and my car's got coffee on the seat. I wouldn't go and sue somebody for it. I just think it just seems an odd thing that you can do. It's not my fault. They should have told me I'm going to sue somebody.
Unless anybody else has the daring to to naysay me on this, I'm going to say that Americans are probably the most litigious people on the planet.
And I'm not going to disagree with you on that, Justin, but I suspect certainly in the UK we are becoming a more litigious state, and there are less of them, but there was certainly a plethora of adverts that if you had an accident at work on the road or something, there was certain lawyers you could call who would go and claim compensation for you. And I can remember many years ago I damaged my foot playing football, and I was walking through a local town, and an individual who worked for one of these companies came up and said, "Oh, what happened to you?" I said, "I was playing football at my company sports hall." He said, "Well, do you want to sue them?" And I sort of said, "Why?" He said, "Well, clearly you had an accident at work. You can sue them." And I had to say to him, "No, it was on my own time. I'd signed a waiver saying that we were doing it on my own time, and it was my own stupidity. No one touched me. I put my foot on the ball. The ball was spinning. I went over and damaged my knee and ankle." Yet this guy was absolutely adamant that I could turn around and, claim compensation from my employer for it. And I just thought, it's just wrong. I just wouldn't do it.
Well, by golly, I applaud you for your initiative.
Because, let's be brutal here. Next time there were any workforce realignment programs in place, you can bet my name would have been on top of the list.
Hey, now, speaking of initiative and alignment, so you and I were talking before we went on the air here about a nifty new idea for our trivia challenge. So why don't you go ahead and unveil it for everyone?
I'm going to do the big reveal, no doubt, in the big world. If we were a high-budget show like the ATS Mix, we'd no doubt have drums and dancing people, and we'd be offering hundreds of thousands of points. Guess what? We're not. We just thought we'd like to try a new idea out, a two-parter to the trivia question. What we want to do is for members to you, either Justin or me, with a question and the answer. And if we use your question, we will give you 500 points. Now, if someone answers your question, they'll get 500 points. But if they don't answer your question before we post the next show, we'll give you the 500 points. But one of the things we're going to do here is Justin and I are going to take a view to whether your question is so specific, so narrow, that it wouldn't conform to a general thing. So if you come up with something that's so specific about your country or something very narrow, we may well reject the question. But what we want to do is, you've got the chance for doubling the number of points that we're going to give away, Justin. Doubling it.
Sure. Now, the litmus test you should use for this is that if the answer to your question can be found on the internet, as long as you provide us with that link, you're probably going to be okay.
Absolutely. But I just want to go on there and say, but if you do the search and I have to go to page 947 of Google to find the answer, we may well say that's a little obscure.
Hey, I'm with you, because I like to point and click just as much as the next guy, but even I don't want to work that hard.
No, and I don't want to see the whole page just full of G and then O's before I get anywhere. So there you are. So hopefully for next week's show, you know what you've got to do. Do not put your question and answer on this show thread. Make sure you, Justin or me, just to make sure on that one. And again, if you agree with what we say, if you disagree with what we say, or there's something that you think we should have said, or maybe a point we should have raised, find the show thread in the ATS Mix show thread and post away. We like your comments. They help us to make sure we drive the show forward.
Now, speaking of driving the show forward, let's realign our satellite dish. And let's dial in and let's talk to Bob Bird.
Hello, everyone. I'm Spencer Tracy. Along with Doc Hancock, I host the new BTS Mix Show. We have a lot of fun, and when we're done with our shows, we like to head over and listen to our sister shows, the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case on the Above Network LLC. The ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous is the source for the latest information on breaking stories, conspiracy theories, and some stuff that's just plain weird. Johnny and Dave have insightful discussions about member posts, member interviews, and exclusive interviews with experts in their field. When I need the latest news and insight from the political arena, I log on to the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Martin and Justin really break it down for me. They discuss member posts, interview members about their stance on the issue, issues, and they have access to today's noted political figures and authors. So come on over and deny boredom with me, Spencer Tracy, and my co-host, the marvelous Doc Hancock, on the BTS Mix Show. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Be part of the revolution. The Above Network, LLC.
Thank you very much. I'm running for the U.S. Senate from Alaska. I'm a member of the Alaskan Independence Party, and I ran against the incumbent in 1990, Ted Stevens, and took 30% of the vote against him in the primary as a Republican.
So what would you rate your chances of doing against Senator Stevens today as a member of the Alaska Independence Party?
Well, I think they're even better than 1990 because I took 30% of the vote with a citizen campaign that spent only $66,000 in 1990. We've got ourselves a three-way race because for the first time in maybe 24 years, the Democrats are running a serious candidate. So we're going to split this three ways. I am unopposed in the primary election, so I'll be in the general election in November. So I think the chances are very good right now.
And just to sort of help out certainly us non-Americans here, I suppose most of us have a perception that there are two political parties in North America. There's the Republicans and the Democrats. So maybe just give us a quick history of the Alaska Independence Party. I know we've had Lynette on, but some of the people might be new to the show. And certainly I know about the Alaskan Independence Party now, but I suspect other listeners won't. So it might be just a good opportunity just to give us a quick overview of the party and what you stand for.
Well, the party was founded by Joe Vogler, I believe, in the early 70s, and Mr. Vogler understood correctly that the United States had signed a treaty right after the Second World War to recognize non-self-governing territories as having the right to be given four options, and that those four options were continued colonial status, amalgamation, or becoming part of the mother country, as it were, Commonwealth status, or independence. We're celebrating our 50th year of statehood here in Alaska, and the people of Alaska were only given two options, and that was to become a state or to continue as a territory. And Mr. Vogler was trying to get Alaskans to become aware of these other two options, and I think the fact that the United States is an outlaw, the federal government is an outlaw by its own standards in refusing to obey the Constitution, gives fuel to people who are really starting to understand that local control and diffusion of power is the best way to preserve freedom. I noticed that the state legislature of Oklahoma 2 or 3 weeks ago passed a resolution overwhelmingly, something like 93-6, that the federal government should cease and desist its unconstitutional actions and start to obey the Constitution's restraint on power. And we are becoming more and more aware of this as the general citizen is, and I think this is a time for small states' rights parties to make their move.
Are you aware of any other parties like your own in other states?
Well, yes, there's the American Independent Party, which is a California-based party. It's quite strong. It has a long history. It goes back, I think, to the election of 1968. The Constitution Party, which gave me its endorsement at their national convention in April, has chapters in all 50 states, and they are starting to, along with the Libertarian Party, which has an awful lot in common with the Constitution Party, they are starting to field citizen candidates all over the country. As a matter of fact, just this last 4th of July weekend, which, by the way, it celebrates our independence from the mother country, England.
I think Martin had noticed that to some degree or not.
I imagine he has, but the Ron Paul folks put together a website of 25 constitutional candidates, and I finished third in the amount of money that was pledged for the candidates nationwide. You can visit that by going to freedomslate08.com, and it shows you an awful lot about that effort that was made this past weekend.
So if people want to know more about you, how do they get to your website?
Well, they could go to www.birdforsenate.com, and you have to be an American citizen to contribute. But I'm a school teacher. I've been teaching school for 35 years. I'm also a former ice hockey coach and also a baseball radio broadcaster. And I've been part of my community on the Kenai Peninsula for over 30 years now. And when folks realize I'm just like one of them, they start to listen. And they also are very interested to learn that I'm not a member of the Republican and Democratic parties anymore, which Pat Buchanan, one of our champions for states' rights, has said it's really the same beast with two heads.
I can understand that point. Now, Martin, I've got a question for you as long as we have Bob on the line here. When he talks about Alaska potentially adopting Commonwealth status, I think he might be using the word Commonwealth differently than the way you understand.
I think so. Yes, I think so. I mean, certainly we have in sort of the, we have what we call as the Commonwealth, which is all the ex, other than probably the United States, is the notable exception to this of where the UK was or England was the colonial power. So we have something called the Commonwealth. But I know that you have, say, certainly some of the East Coast states are still called the Commonwealth, which I think could is probably a throwback to the sort of colonial legacy here. But yeah, that's a very good point to make here, that, you know, there is the what we call is the British Commonwealth, which I don't want to call it that anymore, which is basically ex British Empire countries.
Yes, but you granted all your ex-colony sovereignty, and yet you have free trade between them, and the United States still has that relationship with Puerto Rico, and I don't think Guam rates as a commonwealth. I can believe Guam is still a territory, but we would understand a commonwealth in that we would have a free trade arrangement and probably a defense arrangement as well, because Alaska, being sparsely populated, would not probably be able to adequately defend itself.
So presumably so, but how do you see that if you say a commonwealth and an independent state? Clearly those are two totally separate things in that sense of the word. So clearly you would want Alaska to be an absolutely independent country in the sense of the word, that, you know, I would have to, you know, it would be the same as going to Canada, it would be the same as going to Mexico, it would be the same as me going to anywhere in Europe.
Well, you'll have to help me out with your Commonwealth status in the former British Empire. I believe you have free trade arrangements with those former colonies, and I think that is the number one advantage to being a Commonwealth, and that you have, tariff restrictions would be removed.
That's fair. It's also sort of a body where the leaders get together, and we're also trying to, in certain parts of the world, particularly in Africa, maybe democracy and some of the rights of citizens isn't as well enshrined. So also the British Commonwealth is also there to sort of, you know, encourage countries to have, you know, fair and open elections. And Zimbabwe was a member of the Commonwealth, but is currently suspended. So not only is it just about free trade, Bob, it's also about, you know, the right standards and the way to conduct yourself as a president, as the leadership and elections. So there is a free trade is clearly very important there.
Well, that's correct, and I'm very, very happy that we operate under Anglo-Saxon common law. I think it's a great tradition, and I often discuss it in my history and government classes, because Anglo-Saxon common law really is about the recognition that the individual within his own family is sovereign, and also the promise of local control, and also a republic form of government that guarantees to the people that there are rights within the body politic, as well as the local governmental entities, such as counties and, of course, shires. And I believe that Anglo-Saxon common law protects the rights of the individuals with these many subsidiary recognitions.
To a degree, and I think it's probably something that's both affecting us and North America. There are certainly a lot of moves to restrict my rights and freedoms. And I certainly, you know, there's been a lot of comment about certainly some of the things that the Bush government, with the absolute, support of the, the House of Representatives and Congress, about removing your rights. You know, a lot of people, I think, are very unhappy about some of the Patriot Acts. And, you know, I certainly noticed there's been a very big press coverage about the Supreme Court judgment coming down on gun control or the ownership of guns in Washington, D.C.
Well, we almost every week find more and more usurpations of our privacies. Just recently, they government, I think, ordered Visa and MasterCard to turn their databases over to another entity, which would eventually give it to the federal government. And we're also finding out that the YouTube internet service might actually turn over their data to the government, which would show, you know, what websites we've been visiting. And that's very serious business. And it's not sensationalized in the press, I think, for a very good reason. And it's because it would awaken the people and realize the really serious nature we're in. I want to ask you, you know, I noticed there is grassroots resistance to the EU in many places, and yet it seems the EU administrative or executive leadership seems to want to arrogantly brush by this resistance. Is that an accurate characterization?
Golly, to a degree, yes. I mean, certainly, you know, we've had, and I think Justin and I have discussed it at some length on the show in previous shows regarding the Lisbon Treaty and the fact that Ireland has voted no to it. And you get all these, you know, senior politicians in Europe, Bob, who are just turning around saying, but we still continue with ratification. We need to do this. Absolutely, I think that's happening. But one of the interesting things I see is, how can people, though, change that? Because, I mean, ultimately, if you look at a lot of things that have happened in the US around, you know, restrictions on your freedom, Justin's freedom, and then even my freedom, say, in the UK with what's happened in the UK, they trot out this well-worn phrase, national security and all this type of thing. And that's a very hard argument sometimes for someone to get over and say, but my rights are more important than the rights of the security of the nation.
Well, that is, of course, one of the things that has excused the government's usurpations is this idea of security. But really, the government is not empowered to protect our security. It's empowered to protect our freedoms. And when you decide that security is more important than your freedom, then Ben Franklin, one of our great philosophers or political philosophers, said that people who trade security for their freedom will probably get neither security or freedom. So one of the things I would recommend is that citizens start understanding the first three words of the U.S. Constitution is we the people. It's not we the judges of the United States. It's not we the Congress of the United States. So the people are the ultimate masters of the Constitution, and instead of listening to the Supreme Court tell us what the Constitution means, we ought to tell them what it means. One of the most serious abdications of this responsibility is to allow the Supreme Court to tell us what our rights are, but they have absolutely no right to do so. The 5-4 Supreme Court ruling last week about the right to keep and bear arms is actually supposedly a great relief to gun owners in America, but the very fact that the Supreme Court was permitted to rule on it really admits that they have that right to do so. And I don't think that my rights are predicated upon what the Supreme Court's opinions are. My rights are natural, come from natural law. That's recognized in the Declaration of Independence. And it is given to us by God, and it's about time that people realize that our rights do not come from the government. They come from God Almighty. And if you don't believe in God, then you can simply understand that you have a natural right to defend yourself. And in that regard, for those people who choose not to activate any faith element in understanding their rights, they can still understand it's natural to defend yourself. And so it's natural to speak your mind. It's natural to peaceably assemble. It's natural to tell the government, how dare you come in without a search warrant. And so all those things, I think we can find a common ground and cite natural law.
One of the interesting things you said, Bob, that you'd been a teacher for many years. Do you think that there should be more citizenship and more time spent on actually telling not only American children, but children around the world more about politics, more about their constitutional rights, what their, you know, their inalienable rights as citizens of a country?
I think the smartest thing people can do is to turn off their televisions and to learn that unless we ourselves take the responsibility to preserve our rights or regain our rights and understand that the world can be a very, very dangerous place if we distract ourselves too much with bread and circuses, I think that is the most important thing we can do, because education will accomplish something that government can never do, and that is to get people to understand that they are responsible for their own.
So, Bob, are you retired from teaching now?
Actually, no, I'm not. I'll be entering my 35th year. It's a very interesting situation. I do have the entire summer vacation to campaign. And my school district has part of their contract that permits leave without pay when you run for office, and I've already made the arrangements. Yeah, I'll probably miss a lot of time in September and October, basically the first two and a half months of teaching, in order to complete this campaign into the general election. But I will be teaching even at the community college level. I teach a course called Civil War and Reconstruction, and I would rename it the War Between the States and Reconstruction, but I taught that at the community college level several times before, and I also teach 12th grade or seniors in high school, and one thing I make sure they do, and I've done this for now 25 years, we start in late August, and it goes till mid-January. We will read the entire Declaration of Independence and Constitution of the United States word for word. I explain the historical context. I explain Anglo-Saxon common law. I explain the division of powers that the great philosophers like Montesquieu and even Aquinas and Rousseau talked about, and which America's founding fathers were very eager to cite as the justification for separating from the British Empire. So that's one of the things I do, and the students, about halfway through, start to realize, Mr. Byrd, the Constitution says one thing and our government does another. And they come to that conclusion on their own, and then I tell them, yep, I've done my job now. You're now going to go down the aisle at graduation in May, a thinking citizen rather than a bunch of Shropshire sheep who think that the government's number one function is to confiscate and redistribute people's wealth.
So what's your number one goal as a senator?
My goal is to return freedom to the people of Alaska. That's the only thing that the government can actually do. Otherwise, if I promised health care, if I promised a bridge to nowhere, if I promised federal contracts here and there, you know, you're essentially taking money from other people and redistributing it to others, and then it goes back the other direction. And the only thing that government can do, and this is what's amazing about it, it doesn't cost you a penny to have the government return freedom. And so that is a gift that comes to people of all races, all classes, all ages. It is freedom. And from that point on, you must jealously protect it.
You clearly say you want independence for Alaska. Do you think that the rest of the U.S. would actually be interested in that one, purely because you think of the huge natural resources that Alaska has? You could see why the other, certainly the other 48 contiguous states would be extremely interested in having Alaska inside the fold, so to speak.
Well, I'm not, let me correct that, because I am not calling for independence for Alaska. I am simply calling that for the federal government to obey the restraints of power that the Constitution has obviously mandated. So there would be no need for anybody to agitate for anything like that if the federal government obeyed the Constitution. I always tell people to go to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. It tells you exactly what the federal government is entitled to own. It's entitled to own 10 square miles for the District of Columbia, forts, arsenals, magazines, dockyards, and other needful buildings. This means that every national park, wildlife refuge, national forest, national monument is utterly and wantonly unconstitutional. And that it tells you that the condition for statehood, that we give 60% of this land to the federal government as a condition for entering the Union, is utterly unconstitutional. So I want to amend the Statehood Act to bring the federal government's promises in that Constitution to fruit. And so you are absolutely right. If you look at the writings of the founders of our statehood, they constantly spoke of colonialism and constantly spoke about Alaska simply being a natural resource warehouse where they stick a straw on us and suck us dry. In the earlier part of the 20th century, it was the salmon industry and sometimes other resources. And this is exactly what's happening right now. Alaska needs to assert, as do the other Western states, that the federal government has no right to own this stuff other than what the Constitution lays out. So there's no need to really ask for independence. Let's first of all give the federal government to say, gee, I'm sorry, we really didn't read that part properly, and we'll pull back now. And then everyone will have the Constitution and a renewed understanding that we are these United States, not the United States. We are these United States who formed this Constitution for self-defense, for free trade, and for foreign policy. And that's, if you look at the Federalist Papers, tells you exactly what the guarantee was and the understanding of the Constitution when it was sold to the states and the people back in the 1780s.
Did you ever imagine at an earlier point in your life that you'd be doing this today?
Well, I have to tell you, I found myself a leader in Alaska with the pro-life movement back in the 1980s, and I organized Alaska's largest civil disobedience event in history when we got hundreds of people together to peacefully blockade abortion. And I can tell you that there is a Yupik Eskimo boy, now age 18, who is alive today because of the actions that we did back in the 1780s. Excuse me, the 1980s, excuse me. And so when I realized that I can't keep getting arrested, Gandhi and Martin Luther King are a great example, and even they understood that there's limits to what you can do. And people said, would you run for the U.S. Senate? Because Ted Stevens has a favorable track record for abortion, and somebody needs to run against him. And so I took that plunge in 1990 and discovered that I was quite comfortable speaking in front of crowds large and small. I debated him 90 minutes live on television. And I went back to teaching school and being a coach again because I had a family to raise. And frankly, I don't have the kind of wealth that other candidates do where they can keep running over and over again. But we are in such a desperate situation right now. I told my students about February, I said, I can't stand this any longer. The country is losing its freedom all around us, and nobody's bringing up the right questions, let alone giving the correct answers. And I would rather die than do nothing.
That's a very bold statement, and there's a lot of people on AboveTopSecret.com who are going to take what you say to heart. So let me turn this around here and ask you the antithesis of that question. What are you going to do if you lose?
What am I going to do if I lose? I'll go right back into my classroom and continue to turn out hundreds of future citizens who understand that the Constitution of the United States says one thing and the federal government does another.
Have you ever considered writing a book? Because everything you've just laid out sounds like just chapter by chapter an outline of a very deep ideological thesis.
Well, that's nice. They're not my ideas. I'm afraid I'm just a person who can recognize great ideas and truth and has the ability and a talent, I think, to tell others. I mean, that's what a teacher does. And I guess running for office is a way to put that on a larger scale. And writing a book would be nice, but I have to tell you, I think the books have already been written. I think they've been written by Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Ron Paul, Barry Goldwater, and people like Frederick Bastiat, the great 19th century French philosopher. And I like some of John Locke's ideas. Really, I don't think I would add anything original. I'm just a humble school teacher who finds himself in the midst of the middle of what is an ancient Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Do you foresee in your lifetime that everything that you want, to give Alaska its correct statehood, do you see that as a realistic thing that's going to happen in your lifetime?
Oh, because I'm a Christian, I believe in faith, hope, and charity. And if I gave up, I would be sinning against the virtue of hope. There is always hope. And as long as people want to fight for their freedom, hope will be there. And then there's charity. And even the people, today's enemy is tomorrow's ally. You can't imagine how many people have changed their minds because someone explained it to them. And then there's faith, and that is there's faith not only in humanity but also in the God that created us and gives us the mind and the spirit to recognize the truth. So the truth is real, it is knowable, and most people will gladly accept it once it's given to them and given them a fair chance to think about it for a while. And I think that's where charity comes in. And I'll take my own self-criticism. Sometimes I get pretty impatient, and sometimes I might be rather adamant and trying to wake people up. And I can take a page from the humility of many of the great saints who said, look, be charitable to your enemy. It's the only way to soften them and get them to listen rather than trying to browbeat them verbally. And that's one of the things that you know, I'll be happy to accept this a self-criticism, because there is nobody who's perfect who runs for office. There is nobody perfect that walks the earth, and we have to keep in mind faith, hope, and charity. And yeah, I think if talent is useless, there's only one thing that works. It's Winston Churchill said it. It's perseverance. I think at age 90 or something, he gave some speech at an American college, and it took him 10 minutes to walk from the chair and get to the podium. And a great effort, he said, never give up. Never, 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 never. And I think that's one of the things that I take with me, and that is the idea that hope was always...
Hope and perseverance are great things, but there are a lot of people listening to you right now who are on that razor's edge of making the decision to run for public office. What would you say to them to motivate them to actually dare to do it?
Well, there's the faith aspect. You have to decide that the first step is always the scariest. You don't have any idea where help is going to come from. And that's exactly where I was in February and March. I spoke to 10 people here, 15 people there, and I didn't know who was going to come to help me. And all of a sudden I had a retired lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps sign up, and then I had another person help me as a treasurer, and you just have no idea where help comes from. And if it's meant to be that you should run for office, you'll see help come out of the woodwork or come out of the ground. You just don't know, and the first step is always the scariest. And I knew that because I'd done it in 1990, and I'm still putting together my campaign on the fly. It's pretty exciting watching it grow, and I have to take those steps of faith every single day. And not every day you're going to hit a home run. Some days you seem alone and no one's paying attention, and then another day all of a sudden there's people calling in the radio show and they're willing to help you, and you just can't imagine where allies will come out. That's the whole point of leadership, and that is someone takes that first bold step and then people will follow and people will help you. So that's the words of encouragement. There's only one way to find out if you're meant to do this. You won't get God with his finger writing a message in the sky. You're going to have to take the first step yourself and then trust and faith from that point on.
So now, if people want to see what you've done so far, where do they find your website?
They go to www.birdforsenate.com, and it's spelled just like a bird that flies in the sky, B-I-R-D, www.birdforsenate.com. And once again, if you're an American citizen, you can contribute online, but that's the only people who can legally contribute. You don't have to be an Alaskan. I've had people contribute from as far away as Georgia and Massachusetts already. It certainly would be very, very helpful if those people who are listening in Europe and elsewhere in the world to do what they can. If you have any faith, say prayers. But the other thing is look at your own home, look at your own country, and find out where on earth you can make a difference to regain freedom, which, you know, it's a worldwide crisis right now, in my opinion, and we can't, it's not just the United States, and I think Western Europe has got to rediscover its tradition of limited government and freedom as well.
What I want to do is thank you very much for your time, Bob. We appreciate that, and I just wondered if we could if we get closer to the general election, could we maybe call you or your office up and see if we might be able to get an interview closer to the general election?
Oh, I'd be delighted. I just want to say I've been to Europe 4 times. I'm half Italian. My mother was an Italian member of the Italian Partisans. My dad met her at the end of World War II. He was with intelligence and reconnaissance with the Fifth Army, and they met in Tuscany. That's my favorite place I know for the Brits to vacation. And I speak Italian fairly well. Let's hope that as you look at the general election, we'll finally gain some traction and start moving towards victory in November.
That's fantastic. We'll keep tabs on you, and we'll get back to you again a few weeks before the general election to see what you've learned, what you've done, and maybe, if you're willing, you can share with us a few good campaign stories.
I can simply say William Wallace said it best, freedom.
Come on, Martin, speak up.
I was,
all right,
you know,
that's it.
I've got it, you know. I've got a bit of an issue with that one, but you know, the sentiment is absolutely right. You know, I can't disagree with what Bob said. You know, it's something that, you know, Bob has clearly taken the plunge and said, you know, I'm going to put my head above the parapet. I'm going to fight for what I believe is right. I'm going to fight for my freedom. And it's something that I believe everybody should do. If you passionately believe in your own personal freedom and any other freedom that's legal.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
Well, hey, I have a bit of a problem with the freedom comment and the William Wallace comments because, you know, it's a little bit of, how should we say, Justin and Bob, a little bit of warfare between England and Scotland when that comment was made, you know, so I'm probably not the best example I would use there.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself. I'm still just dying over that. I would have never expected that reaction from you of all people.
Hey, you know, let's face it, you and I, we spoke about the 4th of July show. You know, I was quite happy to say you call it a war of revolution. I call it, you know, a terrorist act. You know, I've got to say, but hey, we can't fault Mr. Bird for using that as an example. I just thought it was funny to chuck it at an Englishman, bearing in mind that, you know, England and Scotland were very close. But at a time, we know we were killing the living daylights out of each other. But you know, I just think it was a great interview to listen to. You know, here's a man that's, you know, put his head above the parapet, is passionate about what he believes he wants to do, you know, primarily for Alaska. But then I also think if you take some of the things he said, is there is relevant across the whole United States. And you can even take some of the ideas he's got and take them across the whole world. And it's just good to see that there are normal, everyday people who aren't necessarily part of the Washington scene, the political scene, who are just thinking, I just want to try and do something that's right for my local community, that's right for my state, and I'm maybe less interested in what's good for the whole USA. And I like that, you know, and we've had that with Wayne Root as well. So we've had two people on here who are passionate about they want to make a change and they're prepared to invest their own time, no doubt their own money, you know, and take all the ridicule from the big parties, no doubt, to make a difference.
Now, speaking of taking ridicule from the big parties and making a difference, who do we have on the slate for next week?
We actually have somebody from the UK, from the UK Independence Party, or UKIP, who are I suppose the best way to describe them is they're not big fans of closer and tighter integration and union with Europe and the European Union. So we'll be talking to Roger Natman, who is a member of the European Parliament. So we've got a full-blown, bona fide, elected representative on the show next week. Justin and I wanted to talk to him because we're interested in what UKIP wants to stand for. But one of the other things that I certainly wanted to talk to Roger about is the implications from his viewpoint of the Irish people voting no to the Lisbon Treaty, which is designed to improve the way that Europe does things together. So from my point of view, great show. Hopefully we've got Roger online to talk about UKIP, the EU, and the Irish no vote.
From the American perspective, the reason that I'm interested in talking to this guy is that having heard what Bob Bird said and his views on the Alaskan relationship with the continental United States, there are some ideological parodies there. I will not say that they're the same, but they're both interested in altering the relationships that are in their future, if that makes any sense. I it's a little difficult. I know we're up against the clock here, and that's why I'm trying to get me to shut up, but do you get my point?
I certainly do, and I think your point, and hopefully when people compare what Bob Bird has said and what Roger Natman will say on our shows, yes, they are interested in changing the relationship that we have with, you know, one of our major trading, economic, social and cultural partners. You know, it would be interesting to see how you stack up what Bob said to what Roger's going to say. And that's certainly a fair point there.
All right, then. I think we've run out of fair points. So that is a wrap for today. I am Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll talk to you next time on the Above Politics Show.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.